Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Welcome back to the Blue Collar BS podcast that keeps it real about the challenges, wins, and straight-up chaos of the blue-collar work. Today's guest, you're not going to want to miss this one, people.
That's right. We've got Frank Manning. He's president of Diversified Marine, a guy who's out here redefining leadership in one of the toughest industries, shipyards. But here's the twist. Frank's career didn't start with a plan. It started with a detour.
Yeah, he has an amazing story. He started to hit the road in an Airstream with his brother, living the vagabond dream, but life had other plans. And now Frank's running a shipyard operation that's solving real-world problems for the marine industry, all while navigating the tricky waters of leadership and innovation.
And let me tell you, his story's got it all. The unexpected turns, those hard lessons, and some seriously sharp insights that every business leader, blue-collar or not, they need to hear it.
So whether you're here for the killer backstory, lessons on leadership, or just looking for inspiration to tackle your own challenges, grab your whiskey, grab your coffee, grab your Diet Pepsi, Diet Coke, whatever it is, and buckle up.
So let's get into this with Frank Manning, only on Blue Collar BS Podcast. This one's an absolute banger, so let's stick around. Welcome back to Blue Collar BS, Brad. How you doing today, my friend?
I am fantastic, Mr. Stephen Doyle. And how's life in Motor City, Detroit?
You know, the Motor City, it's still kicking. We had like a good 30-point swing. It's maybe 20 degrees, 20, 25 out. So kind of nice, still short and t-shirt weather. So we're kicking it here.
It's fantastic. How many, how depressed is the city now after that debacle last weekend?
Well, you're asking that probably the only one in Metro Detroit that's not a fan.
I did not watch the whole game. I went to bed after the wide receiver the interception.
I went to bed at halftime. Cool. So yeah, no, I mean, honestly, you know, there's disappointment, but there's also, there's also hope for next year. So.
Yeah, you
have a very
Bears fans say there's hope next year.
Well, I mean, they always have hope, but you know, they're always off in January, so it's okay. So Brad, enough of that football stuff. Who do we got on the show today?
On the show today, we have Frank Manning, who's introduced to us from Matt Scott, who was a previous guest on our show. So Frank's the president of Diversified Marine. He's been in the marine industry for a very long time for such a young gentleman and has some great background knowledge, faces some unique leadership challenges within the industry, being as mature as it is. And we had our little pre-show call, and the guy's got a lot of good information to share. And I'm very excited to have him here and blessed that you are willing to give us the time, Frank. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. So Frank, that's what they all say until I mess this first question up. So which generation do you fit in with, Matt or Frank?
I am a millennial.
You're a millennial, another millennial on the show. So that makes, you got a boomer, a Gen X, and a millennial.
Whatever.
So that's good.
It's like a good group.
So I'm close, but not quite there.
You're so close.
Good group or the beginning of a bad joke.
Right.
Walk into a bar.
Right. So tell us, Frank, how did you get started on this, on the journey that you're currently holding right now?
So I got into shipyards kind of randomly by happenstance. I took a semester off of college and was going to travel the country in an Airstream and be a vagabond with my brother, younger brother. And a couple of days before we were supposed to leave, he had to bail. So I came out to Portland, Oregon, had an idea for a business unrelated to shipyards. I did that, had some success early on, and then it all came crashing down and about 2 years in, and a friend of mine called me that week and said, hey, his family had started a shipyard services company, and they were looking for somebody to manage their Portland and Seattle operations. And he called me and asked if I wanted to join, and I just asked if they were going to pay me. And they said yes. So at that point, I had no clue what I was getting into. I was born in the Midwest outside of Madison, Wisconsin, so didn't know what a shipyard was, didn't really know what ships were other than they existed. And the first day I walked in, and there was a cruise ship on a dry dock, and they were flying JLGs with cranes, and you'd say whatever you wanted and do whatever you wanted as long as you worked hard. And walked in, I was like, I think this will work. I like being in shipyards, and haven't looked back ever since. So
that's pretty cool.
So as we talked a little bit before the show, you are probably one of the youngest of peers in your industry segment for the shipyard world. How have you developed your leadership skills to support and nurture all the relationships up and down that generational ladder?
Well, I would separate that into kind of work or colleague relationships and then customer relationships. Two different. I think the customer is a lot easier to handle because most customers are excited to see the next generation in the shipyard. And my age where I'm at now, I've kind of got the gap where I'm not really a threat to the generation I'm dealing with. They're on their way out the door.
Right.
So having a 20-30 year gap is a good thing.
Yep.
So that came more or less naturally, the customer relationship side. I have a really great mentor here, Kurt Redd, the owner of our company. He actually, his father said, you know, pretty simple, do what you say you're going to do and do whatever it takes to make that happen. So if you do that, the customer relationship is great. And I've worked with a lot of really interesting people who have had a ton of experience and a long career. And so it's a learning opportunity for me every time I get to interact with them. So that side's easy. The harder side is kind of leading in skilled trades where there's still an age gap, sometimes a significant one. And on top of that, I'm expected to lead people who know more about what they're doing than
right.
Definitely in the beginning than I do. And still specifically to the trade, still know and have a lot more experience than I do. So early on, it was a lot of the challenges in the industry are around planning and organization. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily, there's different ways to do things. And as you get more experience, you can try different things or think about things more from a first principle rather than a how we've done things in the past and push back on that. But early on in my career, it was mostly saying, hey, we have to get this done. How do you want to do it? What's the timeline to do it? And what do you need? And then just making sure that I got everything that somebody needed to accomplish it in the timeline, that we checked in and checked the progress and made adjustments as soon as we were off track to hit the goal, if that was the case. And really just following their plan and then communicating with the other trades that are impacted by that. And I think doing that and really a lot of tradespeople who become managers will have their own vision and are going to tell guys how, guys or girls, how to do a task or how they want it done. So I think it helped gaining respect by saying, hey, how do you want to do this? This is what we have to accomplish. And then having them lay out the plan and just facilitating and make sure we hit the timeline.
Yeah, that is a super smart approach for our listeners to understand that asking questions and letting the experts be the experts and then supporting them to do their role is a great way to create that level of trust. So how long did it take for them to trust you when they gave you the, hey, we need all the bells and whistles when they only really needed one bell? How long did they try to mess with you before you realized or caught on that you are, hey, no, we don't, this isn't what we really need to do? Or did they even try to mess with you asking for more than they needed?
I wouldn't say it was mess with. It was a lot of times they had not been in a position where they're actually ordering parts or asking for things. So okay. There were some errors. I'm fortunate the last company I was at and this company, I've had a lot of leeway and trust from management and ownership.
Good.
So I just made sure as long as it was reasonable, I trusted the person. I'd get what they wanted and get it as quickly as we could.
Okay.
And that really, I mean, that helps build trust. I'm not in a position to, especially early on, to question what they need or what, when they need it or how much they need. After a couple, you know, if they order 60 fittings and we use 30, then you know that person doesn't really do a takeoff in their head and it's just shooting high and you right. question their stuff in the future, but it's all proactive and towards a common goal. So that's it. Okay. Pretty quick. Yeah.
Good.
So as you guys are talking, I'm just kind of curious because being younger and working with an older workforce, how have you seen their attitudes change as you've gotten to know them more with working with younger yeah. individuals?
One of the challenges I had specifically when I came to Diversified is we were a culture that promoted the best tradespeople to managers, and that
yep.
that doesn't always lead to a good manager.
There's no
knock on the person with the trades and the skills. But with that, if there was a period where I had to fight the idea of that I'm jumping them or that I'm taking somebody's job or I was something different in a shipyard. And so there was a fair bit of that early on. And then kind of as I got into the progression and understanding and thinking of things, of doing things different, when you start pushing back, you start facing that. And to me, it was relatively easy to overcome. I think the big things, one, relationships, getting to know the person you're working with, knowing like you have kids, what do you like to do, what talking about what they did on the weekend, really getting to know them on a personal level and level setting that, hey, I'm in this position, you're in that position, we have this goal and we have to work together. So we might as well have a good relationship doing that. And then any time that I've pushed to do something different or try something, I've been very clear up front that if this fails, it's on me. All I'm asking is that we give our best effort and try this. We mm-hmm. all the time. Let's try it differently. Here's how we're going to track it. And here's going to be the win-fail analysis. And if it's a fail, it's on me. Don't worry about it. I'm making this decision. So taking that, there's a weird sense or kind of fear of screwing something up.
Right.
And obviously as a skilled tradesperson, you're supposed to do your craft and do it with skill and pride and quality. And if you don't do that, then that's a reflection of you. Getting them to think that, okay, we're still going to do all those things. We're going to do it a different way. And if it's wrong, it's not on you, it's on me. That has helped a lot.
Yeah, I know back, we did a bunch of metal core testing versus flux core and different things. And it took guys forever and a day to be even comfortable trying to switch out wires or switch out wire sizes or doing different things because that's what they became used to. And having leaders that are willing to allow failures in learning, right? We're learning along the way. We're not necessarily failing because of the job or whatever, we're actually learning something along the way. And those are huge valuable lessons because now you can put those variables together and maybe solve a problem 2 years down the road that comes up. This would be a great idea in this situation. Didn't work right there, but it's going to work here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So was there any, as you move from, you know, Madison, Wisconsin area out to the West Coast, were there any, you're not from here, biases you had to get over at all or anything like that? Or has it been a pretty decent regional fit from a...
Yeah, I haven't had any of that. I still have a 608 number, so...
So everybody knows who it is. So any, if you're calling anybody, they know it's you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Okay.
Wasn't sure because, you know, we often get that tag here in the Midwest, Midwest nice, Midwest naivety, different things that maybe I wasn't sure if there was any of the biases that might exist that people believe or don't believe for some of those myths that are out there.
Yeah, no, I didn't face any of that. So it was, yeah.
Good.
That part was easy.
Okay.
That's good.
What would be your biggest piece of advice to somebody of your generation walking into a situation where they've got a lead both up and down and it's new to them? What would you say the biggest thing they should do is?
I spoke at Matt Scott's maritime welding program graduation. Okay. The last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And the message I've given them both years is confidence and humility. You know, when you're in that position or you're asked to be in a leadership position, you have to have the confidence. You can't show that you're scared to make a decision or scared to make the wrong decision, and you need to lay out a clear path towards what you're trying to accomplish. And then the second thing, in humility, I think a lot of times being in a leadership position can go very quickly to someone's head. And for me, I didn't have, if I welded or tried to weld, I'd set the project back.
So what you're trying to say is you're not going to pass any UT welds, are you?
Yeah. In fact, I picked up a welder a couple of weeks ago and somebody wanted to see me do a pass. And he was like, "You just wasted 20 minutes of my life." So
you do you and you're great at it. I'll do me and I'll do the things I'm great at. We'll figure it all out then.
Yeah, definitely. But if you're in that position, there's a lot of ways to show humility and show that you're not different. We're all part of the team. I love going out and cleaning engine rooms before we paint, cleaning up on a Friday. If you're walking past a crane and somebody needs something hooked, helping with rigging or getting on a forklift, just doing whatever you can to help people and show that you're part of the cause and that you're not afraid to get your hands dirty or get into things to help the team.
So you're not managing from your keyboard is what you're telling us.
I like to not do that. Sometimes that becomes the case out of necessity, but yeah, I like to be out there.
Yeah.
I like to see what we're doing. We do cool, really cool work and it's fun to be a part of it.
That's cool.
How have you, so obviously, you know, getting some of the workforce in from, you know, the different trade schools that are around there, has worked well for you guys. How are you integrating that younger workforce with those tried and true people that have been there for 20, 30 years?
Yeah. So I'll tell a story. One of my favorite stories from the time here. We've had a lot of success with attracting the younger generation, and a big part of that was getting a core group here mm-hmm. to start with. When I first got here, there was not that. So you're eating lunch with guys who think you're part of a generation that doesn't work, and you're getting that all day, and it's not necessarily an accommodating place. We got one of our employees now who's had a great, he's been here 4 years now and just on a really great trajectory. Mm-hmm. He started as a laborer. He was right out of, I think it was a week after high school graduation. And I told him, I think he hired on for, we were $16 an hour for laborers back then. And said, "You're going to be a laborer from 7 till 3:30. We don't have a program. We don't have any formal training. There's a lot of guys around here, and to get ahead long term, you're going to have to figure out how to learn from them. So go find some scrap and teach yourself to weld. And when you pass a weld test, you'll get, I think we gave him a $2 raise, and you'll be a welder. You're going to be the lowest welder on the totem pole. So anytime we need cleaning or that, you're going to go back and do a labor, but you'll be on the path." And it took him 3 months to pass the weld test, got it, and has not looked back since then. He's developed a lot of great relationships with the older tradespeople in the yard, and he's leading a team right now, wrapping up our barge, a team of six people out there who are most of his or double his age.
Wow.
With him yesterday, and this was his first time really leading a crew, and it was a new crew, and he was talking about the challenges of that, and I sent some of that earlier, but he's doing great. And so we haven't had a formal program. We're about a 50 employee team. Mm-hmm. At some point, I'd like to have a formal program. Working with Matt Scott, we get a lot of people in that are turnkey to start and can kind of grow from there. But at the end of the day, it's up to the individual to make something happen. We're going to give you a lot of room to grow, and you grow at a quick pace here, a lot of on the job training. You'll get responsibility quickly. But it's up to you. Our churn rate is low, and we've had very good examples of either coming out of PCC and being leaders. Another guy, Vaughn, we were on sea trials the other day, mm-hmm. and there was a issue with a check valve, and we're down in an engine room, and we've got 15 people on board, and I'm looking at him. It's about an hour to get out from where we are. We've got to push it with another tugboat on a new vessel, and then an hour to come back, and we were going to lose a day of production. And I looked at him. I was like, it's your call. Can we fix this out here? Can we do that? And he's like, give me a minute, and thought about it, and made the call. We got it fixed and had a successful break in of the engines. But he's 24 years old. And
See, those stories don't get told enough, right? Don't get told enough. You know, whether he was on his phone Googling it, or whether he knew what to do or had the book or did whatever.
I was actually impressed. We had just built the same boat last time, and he had taken videos of all the piping systems on the boat. And so he was going back through his videos and looking at that. So,
wow.
So he had the foresight to look ahead to.
So how are you, as the leader of the organization, going to get that video into this is what we do from a standard practice perspective moving forward to prevent that risk from happening again?
Yeah, I encourage everyone to take photos. I take every day I'm out in the yard, I probably take 60 photos. So whenever I have to find them, it's scrolling through and thinking mm-hmm. about what date and make some albums and stuff. But really, we are advancing. One of the exciting things we did 2.5 years ago was we brought engineering in-house. And so that was kind of like an on-the-fly fix. And it's good to have photos and good to see how things were, especially if we're building repeat boats. But on this series of boats, we 3D modeled the boat for the first time in-house on our Rapport series, which is the boat that we built four, and then we built these two, and now we're building three more of those. We built those before the engineer was here. We bought a 3D scanner. So we scanned the whole engine room, and then we have some outsourced overseas engineers. They modeled the whole thing. And so now we have a 3D model of that, which is a lot less time intensive than developing one from scratch from the ground up. So we're trying to be more proactive in our design and how we assemble things. We're doing some really interesting stuff on these next three that we would not have been able to do 3 years ago even. And that I recently in May went to Turkey and Dubai and saw some of the highest production tug yards in the world. The two in Turkey I saw do 30 each a year.
Wow.
2,000 employees. And what we had kind of developed organically as far as our build strategy and what we're doing is what they have in process and really refined. So I think we're on the right track. I think we're doing things that very few, if any other yards in the U.S. are doing. And And we're continuing to series build boats. So we're getting more and more efficient each time. We have a little bit on the sales side of things, have a little bit different strategy and opportunities with our business model that allow us to push the series build. So really excited with where we're going in the future and what we've been able to accomplish. And these next three are really going to be a needle mover for us as an organization.
And the buy-in from the rest of the crew, even the old guys with the change, they're on board, they understand, they're ready to go, or are they going to be the, what are you doing? This is never going to work. What are you facing in that challenge right now?
They're on board. Actually, one of the things we're doing, historically, first boat and even a lot of times second or third boat, we build small spool pieces, fly them onto the boat, make sure they fit, bring them off, weld them out. So this one, what we've done is we've taken our shop, we've cleared it out, and we took that 3D model. We have screenshots printed everywhere. We have iPads with the 3D model on it, and then we have detailed drawings based off that 3D model, and we've set up a dummy engine room in the shop. So they're about 8 feet from the positioner, with no stairs, no ladders, right into where they're going to be setting it up. And so we're going to build the piping systems for three engine rooms right there.
Nice.
And then when the hull gets here and we dry dock it, then we'll be off to the races. So they're on board and they're really excited for it. So hopefully it goes well.
That's a lot of positive energy to be able to take through and deal with. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, we'll see. We're just getting started.
That's okay. You got to start with the first step, right?
I mean,
you just got to keep going and keep celebrating those small wins along the way as you make that happen. Going back to your success story with the gentleman that was self-taught welding, do you believe that because he went through what he did to go teach himself, talk, learn, and create that engagement that now he's leading some of the older crew members, that they saw his determination, that now he has gained that he's in this for the long haul moment? Whereas if you just put him in that spot coming off the street from PCC, that they wouldn't have had that same level of respect?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's definitely earned it and has the respect of that crew for sure. So yeah, I think for him it's having confidence and which will come in time. But yeah, he's got the respect and he's got the knowledge to do what he's doing. So that definitely helped.
That's cool.
What I'm curious with is, with somebody at that age, what we have seen is usually they're stigmatized by, you know, the working with that older generation, and they have to be somebody they're not when they manage them. How have you seen that with this individual in managing that workforce?
I think it's just, I mean, we're on that project specifically is on a tight timeline. And everyone is aware of that. And they're all in the boat together. Everyone wants it to be successful. And the other thing too, a lot of older, not necessarily older, but people skilled in their trade, want to just do their trade. And so a lot of times it's less of an issue as you would think, especially if somebody's skilled, reasonable, cares and works hard, that's not necessarily an impediment here. I don't know if it would be. I would imagine there are other situations where
if you got everybody showing up every day, coming in, doing their job and putting in, you know, 8 hours of burn time, it's going to make his job a lot easier. If you've got a lot of I'm calling in sick, showing up late, can't do any of those types of things, his role could be much more challenging.
I think one of the cool things here that's, I think you can replicate in a lot of organizations, especially industrials. But one of the cool things here is that we build such a impressive product. Seeing a tugboat, we had sea trials this morning, so my hair is a little bit off. I was out on a skiff
Mine's a problem. Way too much wind.
It just blew right off.
But seeing that and seeing one of the things I like to see in the progression of a younger tradesperson here is they come here. We're usually it's very few weeks where the boat is finished and looks good in a build. There's like 2 weeks where that's the case. So we probably have 4 to 6 weeks a year where there's a boat that looks awesome. The rest of the time it looks like this is going to be a new boat. So seeing that and seeing as it go through that progression and seeing the young people when they walk around and they're taking pictures, they want to show their friends. We try and get them out on sea trials. They take videos of the decks getting washed out and the feel the performance of the thing that they built and know they're part of that. There's a lot of pride in what we do. We're a 3/4 acre yard in Portland, Oregon, which is not an easy
not
place
big.
To build boats. We're the only shipyard in the country that builds boats, fully assembles them on dry docks. We're changing that a little bit, but historically we have. And we're the number one, since we started building, we're the number one tugboat builder on the West Coast. So everything, every indicator of how we should do based on our size, our location, all of that, says we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. We should be a repair yard, or we should be doing that. And we're the number one on the West Coast. Since we've started building, we're number three in the country. So I try and make sure that everyone knows that we take really cool videos. There's some on my LinkedIn of the sea trials and the work we do. And whenever I get them, I tell everyone in our yard to get on LinkedIn, but I send out a group chat. We post photos of our boats. We show them working. We're right now the 80-foot boat that we're building, which is the next three that we're going into. Everyone that we've built has set the record, and then the next one has passed it for the most powerful tug ever built under 80 feet. So we're doing really cool stuff here. And so if together we have a goal and want to do something or need to get something done, we know we can, and we know that we're going to with the right effort and the right team. So it's not to say we don't have unnecessarily drama or BS here and there. Everyone's got that, but we work through it and we're proud of what we do.
Everyone has
it. So to that point, to be part of that team or somebody that might be, you know, East Coast, Midwest, down South, that might want to learn more about your organization and building and being part of this great greatness that's taking place, how or where do they go to find you or your team to learn more? And
hit me up on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Frank Manning. Yeah.
That's easy enough.
Just actually, before the show, I had a tugboat captain from Morocco send me a message saying that he liked our videos and what we were doing. So.
Well, then I expect to get a listen out of Morocco when the show goes live.
I'll tell him.
That'd be cool.
We can see those things. We have data.
Perfect.
Right.
So awesome. Frank, thank you so much for being here, sharing your story, and congratulations to you and your team for the success that you are creating out there. Not often we get, in fact, never have we had the number one West Coast tugboat building manufacturer on our show. So
thank you.
That's first for us as well. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Well, good to be here, and this was fun.
So. All right, man. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Frank.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.